Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning. This is your host, Cedric Shabazz, live from Revolutionary Talk Radio, also known as God Brother Radio, which is a division of God Brothers Entertainment, which consists of five different businesses. It's Sunday morning, and it's February 22nd, 2015. And the title of my show is Part 2, African Americans Living with African or Islamic Names After 9/11. How are we living? How are we coping? That now that a majority of us and a lot of us, especially us African American men who have Islamic names or African names, are not only do we have to live day by day being African Americans in America, or a black man in America, if you want to be blatant about it. But now, you know, since 9/11, we have to worry about our own country, our beloved country, United States of America, treating us or looking or having us under surveillance, treating us like we are terrorists because of our Muslim religion or the perception of all African people with African descent with African names are subject to surveillance, and it's a very uncomfortable feeling. I'm going to get to that part of the story about my trials and tribulations through that 9/11, but I'm going to back up a little. I left off on part one. I think I was around 21 years old, and I was just at this point in my life where I got a lot of black nationalistic education, and like I said, I did a lot of reading on Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale and Eldridge Cleaver and George Jackson, Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Nelson Mandela, whatever revolutionary. I was really into the revolutionaries, people who changed history, who changed the world. And so I was really attracted to the revolutionaries. So do I consider myself a revolutionary? Yes, I do. But I consider myself a peaceful revolutionary in my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But that's me personally. But I do consider myself a revolutionary. I do consider myself a revolutionary for my people, the African-American people, and their interests. So that I do look at myself that way, and that's what I live for. I love all people. I love all human beings. It doesn't matter what race, religion, or non-religion, or your sexual orientation to me. Human beings are human beings. I just know that the Lord put me on this earth, first of all, to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ, and the second of all, to help my people, the African American people, and specifically African American men and black males, to be the original God, the original man of this earth that they were born to be. So that's my life's mission. But just to get back to my story, I was about 21, and at that point I was deciding if I was going through, I already made a decision that I was not going to accept having my last name, Newby, at that time. I was N-E-W-B-Y. And that was the slave master's name given to our family on my mother's side. And then at the time, it was really bugging me that I had a slave master's name, and I didn't want a slave master's name anymore. I wanted my own name. I wanted my own identity. And so I prayed about it, but I went through several names, and it took me probably about 4 years before I settled on a name. But through that process, I went through different names, not, you know, legally putting, you know, changing things like that. But I kept it conscious, thinking that maybe my name, I should change my first name, or I should change my last name, or I should change both names. So I was going through that phase until about 2 years. And then I was about 23 years old, and I was at a point in my life when I was 23, I was thinking that, you know, something has to give, you know, At that time, I was involved in the music business for 2 years, being a manager and a promoter for about probably about 5 years at that time. And I had my own company, but also was working at the Men's Warehouse in Fremont, California at that time at the headquarters there in the warehouse, actual warehouse, from the ages of 21 to 25 for 5 years. But, so I was working for George Zimmer personally because he came to the office every day. He used to live in Oakland Hills. So for 5 years, I worked for George Zimmer, who happened to be my mentor, one of my mentors. So I'm blessed to say that. But let me get out of myself and get back to the story, excuse me. And at the time, I was going through my identity crisis, but I felt I was growing. It was a metamorphosis for me. And one day, the bottom kind of fell out my life. I was like 23, and at that time, I was dating two women at the same time, and they both kind of just dumped me at the same time. One dumped me probably a couple of years before that. I just can't remember clearly, but I found myself alone after being in a relationship for 4 years with two women, and they knew about each other, and they also dated other people, so I don't think anybody was exclusive, but it wasn't one of those things that, whatever it was what it was, but I was at a crossroads at my life at 23 because I had to reevaluate where I was going in my life. So I made some decisions. I called my mom up one day and I asked her, could I move back home for at least the summer so I could get my mind, my head straight, because I was doing way too much partying. Also, I was every other night I was in the club. So, I had to get my mind right. And I've been partying since like that since I was like 18 years old. So you might as well say about good 18 to 23, a good 5 years straight, I was all about the party and the beer, the weed, the drugs, the clubs. I was single then. That's just what I did. But I had to make a change. And so I moved back home for 3 months that summer to get my head straight. And while one of those days while I was laying on my mom's couch doing some channel surfing, I think I got kind of bored of doing that. So I started looking through her. She had a big box of books. And so I started looking through her books for a book to read. And I happened to come across the autobiography of Malcolm X. And so like I said, to that point in time, I've heard of Malcolm X, like I said, in late 80s. And it was, I would say it was probably in about 1990, the year 1990 right now. So Spike Lee has, to my knowledge, Spike Lee didn't, I didn't know who Spike Lee was at the time. And I mean, I saw the movie Do the Right Thing, but he had not done Malcolm X yet. So that came out maybe a year later, maybe, or 2 years. I'm not sure, but so I read the book, the autobiography of Malcolm X, and after I finished that book, it was kind of it was a revelation to me. It was a revelation to me on who I am, and it was like, if people go back to that scene where in the Malcolm X movie where Denzel Washington was in prison playing Malcolm X, and he received a letter from I think it was Elijah Muhammad, and he was reading the letter, or I'm not sure if he was reading the letter that Elijah Muhammad sent him, or he was reading the letter that he wrote or something like that right now. But after he read the letter, he had a revelation. That he, it was almost like Paul, Apostle Paul, had a revelation when he was on his way to Damascus, Syria, and our Lord Jesus Christ had thrown him off his horse, and he converted to being a Christian from that point on. So that was kind of like the revelation I went through, kind of like what Malcolm did. He actually felt and thought he saw Elijah Muhammad, and he believed he saw Elijah Muhammad talking to him. And after that, he went to his knees in prayer and submission, and he was a new person. He felt like a new spirit, a new life, and that was the exact same feeling I felt after I read the autobiography of Malcolm X for the first time in my life. At 23 years old, a black man, African American, we had no knowledge of Malcolm X up to that time, except for what I've heard on hip hop music, like Public Enemy or anything else. So this is, and I couldn't put the book down. I remember I picked it up, I read it, and I was not the same person ever again after reading the autobiography of Malcolm X. I finally felt like I know who I was, who I'm supposed to be, where I was going, and I just went 100% without no doubt that I was supposed to be. At that point, I was interested in something that we would call knowledge of self. And so I got real interested into, and during this time, like I said, I didn't have a book education about Islam or a book education about the Nation of Islam or Malcolm X. Now, I did experience firsthand since I was 9 years old and all my life from that point of having Muslim friends in the Nation of Islam. I've always had those. So I had more experience being around them physically and in their houses and like that than I had more experience than actually attending their services or get into the religion at that from that point. So, but at that point, I got interested in the religion of Islam, and I really felt that the religion, as a black man, a black religion, that it was for me. And so, I studied for the ages of 21, 22, 23, and 24 Islam, and I considered myself a Muslim at that time. And but I wasn't. I didn't join a particular organization at that time. I considered myself a Muslim, but I considered myself one who was not committed to a mosque. Or at that time, I was not. I haven't decided what route I was going to take. It was I was going to join the actual organization of the Nation of Islam, or was I going to join Warren Dean Muhammad American Music Council? Mossad, Orthodox Islam, Sunni Islam, the way our brother Elhaj Malik El Shabazz, also known as Malcolm X, true Islam route. So I haven't decided what route I was going to go. I was kind of stuck. So, but I did go ahead and when January of 1992 came around. I made a decision on January 2nd, 1992, to change my name legally from Cedric Newby to Cedric Shabazz. So I made the commitment and the decision at the age of 25 in January of 1992 that I was now Cedric Shabazz legally, and at that point I shaved my head, or I wore a kabbadis, a bald head, a nicely trimmed, faded sometimes. I didn't wear any hair on my face except for a mustache. So I kept clean shaven, a mustache and a bald head, which is required to be in the Nation of Islam. So at that point, I started to decide that maybe my calling was to be a minister in the Nation of Islam. So that was my goal at that time. So I did try to join a mosque, and I did try to join the mosque with Minister Brother Keith Muhammad out in Oakland, California at the time off San Pablo Avenue. And so I started going to the mosque, and I started going to the every day, and I started learning about the Nation of Islam. And but I every time I tried to get my ex, I failed. It was like three or four times that I was trying to trace the ex that they have you do. So because you gotta, you know, what you do is you trace your ex. You gotta, and then once you do the ex, they send the ex off to the headquarters in Chicago, and they will decide if your ex is good enough to get a membership, a card, or, you know, you'll be an official member of the organization of the Nation of Islam. That was the first thing that we was required for you to be part of the organization is that you had to get your X. And I never was able to get my X because I didn't pass. So I never became Cedric X. So I just kind of just said, but you know what, I'm just going to be Cedric Shabazz. So so I went into the mosque as Cedric Shabazz, and nobody gave me that name. I gave it to myself. I honored that name, the tribe of Shabazz. And when I first read the book from our dear brother Elijah Muhammad called Message to the Black Man, that book had changed my life forever. And I say to every black man in America to this day, regardless if you're a Muslim or not, that that is a must read. The message of the black man is a must read for every black man in America. And it doesn't mean you have to read this book to be a Muslim, or you even have to agree about the doctrine inside. But you will go away learning something that you can benefit your life in the future as being a black man, African American man in the future, by reading the book by Elijah Muhammad called Message to the Black Man. Great book, great book. So I wasn't able to actually be a organized member into the Nation of Islam. And then there was another particular group in Oakland that was also part of the Nation of Islam, and I also had the business. I started a business at that time of doing black comic books. So I used to sell this black comic book called The Black Savior out of their three or four bakeries in Oakland, California. The Black Muslim Bakery off Sanford Avenue and 50th Avenue in Oakland, borderline where Berkeley is. It used to be a Black Muslim Bakery there that I used to attend quite honestly all the time. So I got used to eating once a day, and I got used to praying five times a day, and I got used to reframing from pork. And matter of fact, I stopped eating pork when I was like 20 or 21 or something. So it's been a long time since I really, eating pork. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm a hypocrite too, because if you ask me, did I take any pork off my pizza, I would say no. But, you know, blatantly, I'm not going to go into the store and buy some pork chops, you know, but I would be a hypocrite to say that that pork doesn't taste good, because pork, you know, bacon does taste good to me, you know, but not necessarily a religious point of view for me, but from a health point of view, especially with African Americans, eating swine and bacon, it's not going to stop you from going to hell, but it can stop you. It can stop your heart. You know what I mean? Your high blood pressure and sickness from pork and swine is not good. It's not good for African Americans, black people, to eat pork, just for health reasons. And but we do. Some of us do, you know, but then I did come in conflict with one section of the Nation of Islam that I don't want to get into any particulars. But at that time, I decided that that particular organization wasn't an organization that I could be a member of. And it had nothing to do with their doctrine. The only thing I could honestly say that I did not believe was that white people or European Americans or people from Caucasians were devils. I never believed that. I was never raised to believe that. That wasn't in my heart to ever believe. And so therefore, for that reason only, I could not be a member of the Nation of Islam. So I just want to make that clear. But, you know, so when I decided that I wasn't going to be a member or couldn't be a member of the Organization of Nation of Islam, I decided I was at that time considered myself and was still a Muslim at that time. And so I lived my life from that point on in my life when I was 25 years old all the way up to a certain point in my life of the year 2003. April 1st, 2003. Up to that time, I lived at my daily life lived as a Muslim. I wasn't beholden to any organization or not, but I believed in the Quran. I believed into the pillars of Islam. I prayed five times a day. Was I perfect? No. Did I drink? Yeah, sometimes I drink, and I was not supposed to drink. Did I do drugs? Sometimes I did drugs, and I wasn't supposed to do drugs. I basically was the same person as Cedric Newby as far as my habits were concerned, but I was growing and metamorphosis to myself to not drink no more. Not alcohol is forbidden in Islam. Drugs are forbidden in Islam. So I was getting rid of these things that were forbidden in Islam. And sometimes I was successful, and many times I wasn't. You know, but so my metamorphosis kind of continued from there. But I was a hardcore Muslim. I didn't really incorporate the doctrines of the nation and on a certain level, nor did I accept Orthodox Islam from any mosque, traditionally from the American Music Council or anything like that. I looked at myself. I was a Muslim, but I was a loner. I just believed in my relationship with my God, and that was it. And I lived that way until April 1st of 2003, where God, my God at that time, said it was time for me to accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. So could you say that I converted from Islam to Christianity? Some people would view it that way. I don't. I looked at it that it was just a metamorphosis of me growing into who the Lord wanted me to be, and it was the avenues and the travels that I had to go through to get there. And I do see 334-430-9507 calling in, and I would love to accept your call, but I really can't because I have like 7 minutes left, and I think it might be about 7 minutes left of this story. It's only a 30-minute show, and I'm telling you, your whole time is incredible, almost 10 minutes for 334. And so I'm just letting you know, I'm sorry I can't answer the phone, but you can feel free to continue to listen to the show, and it's an honor that you've held on almost 10 minutes. I think that's the first time any caller has ever did that. But 334, please feel free to call me anytime in the future of my shows. And I know for a fact that I will never forget this number, 334, that's calling in. So thank you so much, whoever you are. But anyways, I got about 6 minutes left in the show. And I'm going to kind of fast forward this story. But before I do that, I do like to try to express how when my family learned that I had joined the Nation of Islam, or tried to join the Nation of Islam, which meaning that they saw me every evening going to the mosque wearing a suit and a bow tie, so they knew that I was involved in some religious. I was involved into this particular religion. They never said anything negative to me because my family loves me. And I never pushed my religion on my family. God-believing people, but we all have our different beliefs, and we all always respected that in our family. So my family is my family. They never judged me. If anything, they just think I'm crazy and probably have a reason to think I'm crazy because I've done crazy things over the years. So they probably just thought, well, this is one of just crazy things that Cedric's going to go through. Pretty much. They probably really, be honest with you, my family loves me, but I think they think I'm I'm insane. You know what I'm saying? I'm insane. I mean, think about it. I spent 3 years and 9 months in a homeless shelter on the streets of Las Vegas, and I didn't have to, because I do have family, but I chose to. So what person in their right mind would choose to be homeless for 3 years and 9 months? That makes you kind of think, you say, something's wrong with them. But anyways, getting back to the story, I'm going to speed it up a little. And after 9/11, I started being treated different at my job at Walmart in Round Rock, Texas. A particular European American female manager would harshly dictate my job assignments, and she was relentless. And at first, I just thought she was having a bad day, but for 2 weeks, she was on my back more than others, and she would tell me I had to stay overtime when she knew I could not because I had to take my child to school every morning, but she insists I worked overtime on my night job, on my night shift, stocking groceries for Walmart at that time. And I refused to do so, and that was the beginning of my ending for this job and living in the state of Texas. Now, don't get me wrong, state of Texas is a beautiful state, and the people are beautiful, the neighbors are beautiful, the southern hospitality, and I love the state of Texas, I really do. I'm not too fond of it being a right-to-work state, too fond of it. Of the justice system. They're very conservative there, and I do understand that. But, other than that, state of Texas is a beautiful state. So I'll just make sure I put that out there. Now, after consulting with her boss and going over her head, she got angrier and started to set plans on firing me. So I transferred to the day shift, trying to hold on because now I would lose my vacation pay and bonus check of $722 if I quit or get fired before December 1st, 2001. And so I was just trying to hang in there. So so I went to Human Resources and they informed me that if I resigned, I would still qualify for my vacation pay plus my $722 bonus check. So I resigned. Now, when I went to go pick up my last paycheck, my vacation check, and bonus check, they refused my bonus check and said I disqualified myself by not resigning after December 31st, 2001. They purposely deceived me, Human Resources, and I never received my $722 bonus check. Then one day in January of 2002, while I still was living in Round Rock, Texas, walking home from work one night. Actually, I resigned. I don't know where I was coming from, probably from a club or something, a strip joint or something. I wasn't living right back then. But anyways, one day I was walking home at night in Round Rock, Texas, when a white undercover car pulled up and four men jumped out and started assaulting me. And when a man came out of his house after hearing all the commotion and turned on his porch spotlight, only did they jump back in their unmarked car and flee the scene. And to this day, I live with those five fractures to this day, and I had to leave the state of Texas to save my life. And on February 2nd, 2002, at 3 a.m. in the morning, I arrived in Las Vegas, Nevada, with $200 and clothes on my back. Now, while I stepped off the Greyhound bus, Las Vegas Metro Police was waiting for me. They introduced themselves to me and to let me know they know I am now in their town, Las Vegas, Nevada. Well, once again, thank you for listening to me. My name is Cedric Shabazz, host and of the Revolutionary Talk Radio, also known as God Brother Radio, division of God Brothers Entertainment, live from Sin City, Las Vegas, Nevada. If you'd like to continue to support God Brother Radio, please go to Zazzle, Zazzle.com/ Cedric Shabazz, CedricShabazz. Please go to Zazzle.com, Zazzle.com/ Cedric Shabazz, CedricShabazz. And please go there and go ahead, you go there and purchase a t-shirt, a hat, a coffee mug, a poster, a couple shirts, calendars. I have over 200 logos and 5,000 products at that particular store, and the money from that store pretty much supports God Brothers Radio. So once again, I thank you very much, and God bless you, and hopefully I see you on the radio next Sunday. Thank you so much, and God bless you.